2014, junio 29, el gran sol brasileño, sus caras como nieve, bendita selección, no podía ser real, el piojo los llevaba directo a la final, a ganar el mundial. Gio metió un golazo, Ochoa fue un dios, el público se unía en esta ovación. ¡Puto! ¡Pinches holandeses nos sacaron del mundial con sus penaltis!
Welcome to the Red Card District semifinal preview. Here with us today is Robert WFD. Hello, Robert Burns. It's good to have you on.
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Very, very well. Thank you, Robert. So we've seen the... we're almost at the final stages now of the World Cup, and we can't believe it's over. We can't believe it's almost over.
It's scary, man. I hate the fact that we have now had our last day of multiple matches in a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't like it one bit.
The dream's over.
It's the finished. Only, you know what, there is one good part of it all, though, and that's, like, the personalities that come out of it, and then all of a sudden now you, like, you get really excited about the club season again, just because it's like you've seen all these... You know, all these kind of characters that have kind of come out of nowhere that you didn't really know about a lot about before. And now there's all this kind of expectation heaped on them from good World Cups. And then it's just kind of exciting to see how they fit in and where everybody's going. And all of a sudden some guy had a, you know, some guy played two or three good games in the World Cup. And now all of a sudden his transfer value's, you know, 20%, 30% more than it would have been. And now instead of going to Russia, he's going to Italy. You know, it's like all these kind of cool things that kind of come out of it. So I'm not going to say I'm completely bummed out that it's over, because, you know, it happens, but it does make me pretty excited about actually the club season coming up. But that's just me.
I'm a junkie, man. I need my fix, you know.
So
having
I.
this having it day after day and just repeating.
I have nothing to wake up for anymore.
He is here specifically for the World Cup, so now he does not know what to do with himself other than
sleeping's good. Sleeping's not a bad alternative.
It is not. But we saw a lot of action. We had a very big big South American battle for the first match of the quarterfinals, with Brazil taking on Colombia. Colombia falling a little bit short, but the match was played
brutal.
At a breakneck speed in the first half. Give me some of your thoughts on that match.
Obviously the officiating was a huge thing, because it's funny, because when people talk about they don't want a ref to influence the game too much, and they can do it in two different ways. One is being too card happy, and, you know, giving, dishing out yellows in the first 10 minutes of a game, so that changes the entire complexion. Or in the case of the Brazil Colombia game, was pretty much the exact opposite. I mean, that guy, they were pummeling James Rodriguez. It was a free for all of fouls, and I don't think there was a yellow card until something like the 75th minute or something like that. So it really was kind of it definitely played into Brazil's hands, because that free flow that had worked so well for Colombia throughout the group stage and in the round of 16, they just couldn't do any of that, and there was no repercussion for the Brazilian side. So it changed a lot of the nature of how Colombia could play the game, because they were so free flowing before that. And then all of a sudden, you know, they just couldn't be anymore, because they were just tactically fouling them all over the place, and there was no repercussion.
See, I actually read a piece which showed that Colombia actually fouled more than Brazil.
I'm not saying they didn't. I'm saying it on both sides. But that's what I'm saying. It was a CONMEBOL rough. It looked more like something like Ecuador and Bolivia, you know, in terms of just like the fouling and you know, there's definitely a hard edge to CONMEBOL. It's not just slow pace, or, you know, this old perception of it being very kind of stylistic and this and that. And no way. I mean, you get some really rough games in CONMEBOL, and this was kind of an ode to that, I would say. And for sure, Colombia was doing the same thing. But my point is that had the ref been, you know, there's got to be a happy medium between not being too card happy, but also not letting that kind of stuff go, that you are not even allowed to play your own game and to get into the flow of your game.
We still got the feeling, though, that he was instructed by FIFA in a way to keep Brazilians in the semifinal
Well, it was intriguing because this guy, the Spanish referee, has a reputation for being card happy. And so it right. seems like that was tempered, or maybe just the situation got to him and he was just bottling it. I mean, I think the piece that you were talking about, I think I retweeted, it was from Bobby McMahon, and he broke down. He's talked about rewatching it and trying to see how it played with the narrative that was played in the media. And so at first, I think Brazil didn't take the lead in terms of having more fouls until right just before halftime.
Yeah.
But the thing was that both teams were fouling a lot. And I think of the fouls, like Colombia committed the first three or four fouls, but they were little small things. And Brazil were really coming in with a lot of thunderous challenges. That's why I think, you know, stats can be a little bit misleading, because it seemed like the people that were really putting in, you know, the more serious fouls, or, you know, causing the most contact and what looked like the worst fouls, were the Brazilians. And in the by the end of the match, they did, I think it was like 10 more fouls than Colombia.
Because they wanted to hold on to the lead. It's a classic case of holding on to the lead and protecting it.
Certainly.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting to see how that plays into the narrative. But, I mean, anyone who watched the match can see what it did in terms of breaking up the flow of the game. And
right.
And I don't know, I don't think you're taking it's a stretch of the imagination to say that the referee did bottle it in a sense, because it's kind of like you're swallowing your whistle here. Like, what is the deal? And then he was blowing whistles. He was letting a few go. And then he was whistling for fouls, but
even with bottling, he still managed to upset entire Brazil.
Well, but the thing is,
Silva yellow card.
But the thing is that, like, whatever. Silva's a fucking idiot for getting that yellow card.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, that's his own fault. But you know, to do that, and like, you know, if you're a footballer, you understand when you see in a match that these things start to go on, a referee's not taking control, you take your liberties. And you continue to foul, because if there's no
sure.
punishment, then that's just the way it goes. And so,
right.
I mean, we've seen that before, that they don't, if you don't take control of the match, this is what can happen.
And I think that's what Silva thought when he made that stupid foul.
If you can keep getting away
stupid.
With it. And I think that, I think at the very least, you know, again, I don't want to sit there and say, you know, that the ref has a directive, but when there's so much scrutiny on a referee, when you get to this level, then he knows what is public perception is. He knows what his reputation is. And at that point, then it's kind of like, oh, well, maybe I should, you know, be a little bit more, allow a lot more things to happen because of that perception. Every referee is going to take it differently. Some aren't going to give a damn what anybody thinks, but others are not that case. So I don't know, you know, much about him on a personal level, if anything at all. It's just, it seems a little bit suspect, but at the same time, Just think of the chaos that would have happened if Brazil would have gone out. I mean, the interesting part about this, and even the foul on Neymar, I don't think that there was anything malicious in that one. I think
that's what I was about to ask you. You thought it was a pretty straightforward foul?
When you see how the rest of the game went, I don't think that it was anything that looked like a very deliberate attempt to injure the guy. It didn't look like that to me. In fact, even watching the foul itself, it didn't look that bad. You can replay that thing over and over again. It doesn't look like it's anything that was worse that had been going on in the whole game.
No, and I thought Neymar, who had been flopping around, you know, I mean,
exactly.
he had been fouled, but, you know, he jumps into challenges just to go sprawling, you know.
Right.
Honestly, my first impression was like, oh, Neymar, like, you know, maybe you got a bruised tailbone or something, but, you know, get your ass up. He's wasting time.
Exactly.
That's the way it felt when you watched it. It didn't look like a particularly malicious foul.
Right.
Alex, do you have any different thoughts on it, or do you think along the same lines?
I mean, I think Neymar has a very slight body type. He's very lean. He's very, very thin. He's like a catwalk model. So,
he's a little frail.
Yeah, so when people rush into him, it will cause damage, regardless if it looks like he's jumping around or not. You know, he's not that type of person who's going to take damage as well as someone like Giroud or Balotelli or whatnot. So, what I saw at first time, I thought it could be both and both, you know. But after they made it clear he was going off, I was a bit concerned. And then,
but I mean, what about the foul, though? I mean, like, regardless of the injury, did you think it was particularly malicious?
If I wouldn't have given a red card for it, I don't think it was malicious. I wouldn't have given a red card. I would have given a yellow for that.
I mean, it wasn't even necessarily a yellow. I mean,
I think with the way that happened, the reaction of everything that happened, you could have to give a yellow.
Well, yeah, but you can't give out cards based on an injury happening.
Yeah,
that shouldn't be.
If someone crashes into someone's back and his back looks like he's ready, like he's damaged his back,
But the damage isn't necessarily what matters, you
right?
Know, it's
what
about
what
the
happens?
Type of challenge.
What happens if that had been some type of a recurring injury that had happened that had been kept quiet for a long time, and it was just took one minor little twitch to set it off? I mean, you can't use the aftermath of a foul to say then, oh, okay, now it's a red card because this guy's hurt. I don't think so. I think it's the foul itself, is going to be the only indicator if it's going to be a card or not, not the consequence of that foul. It shouldn't be, at least.
I wish the Brazilian people would know this, because Zuniga is public enemy number one right now. After Messi.
Oh, yeah. I feel bad for him, for sure. For sure. But the interesting thing is also, just finishing up with the whole Neymar thing, is what is really interesting about his absence is, and I tweeted about this today, was the fact that it's amazing that at the very least, if Neymar would have been fine, if Silva was in and they lose tomorrow to Germany, the place would erupt. It would be, I've never felt that kind of, in all the years that I've been watching the game, I've never felt like this type of almost apprehension that, oh my God, if they lose, like, the shit's really going to hit the fan in that country.
Absolutely.
And the fun and the interesting part is Neymar, his injury might be providing the kind of outlet that lets people have an excuse instead of raging if they lose tomorrow.
Absolutely. I think Neymar is bigger than just being a footballer for Brazil right now.
For sure.
He's an idol. He's a player that people look up to and people talk about, and just seeing his video after the game showed you how important it was, and how Brazilians perceive him as, you know, he's bigger than he is.
For sure. And my point is that now, if they lose tomorrow, instead of going crazy, they're going to say, well, it would have been different if we had Neymar.
Of course.
But now it gives them kind of an excuse.
That's a good thing.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. It's almost like a blessing in disguise. I know that sounds horrible.
Well,
it's not
it gives them a rationale and a reason why some people might not. I mean, granted, Brazilians are going to be completely distraught when they lose to Germany anyway.
I agree.
When they lose to Germany.
If Fred will get a hat trick, you guys.
This is a definite case of there's just no way.
Yeah, I'm going to put the
I've seen Stranger Things.
I've seen Stranger Things as well, but the Germans at the very least will make the final. We know that, you know. Whether or not they'll win it.
You know, Scolari says he can make it without Neymar, but
Of course he's going to say that, and they obviously could. I mean, anything can happen in a match, but I mean, yeah, I feel pretty strong.
Can't hold the truth, so
who replaces him?
Neymar. It's going to be Fred, and it's going to be.
You expect to see Bernard. more of. I don't know if Bernard's going to come in on the wing, or I mean, you're just going to.
It's probably Burima.
No,
I mean, I'm expecting
Oscar. Oscar's going to be the main man. He's going to be the one thing that the creative hub that everything runs through. He's been a little more peripheral for those last couple matches, so it's certainly his chance to stake his claim, because he's the real player that is their real number 10.
Does that mean they need three proper midfielders in midfield then?
Not necessarily, but like you said, it could be. I mean, I think they've been missing what Willian has brought to Chelsea. Like, I did not rate him as highly as I didn't rate him as highly before this past season until after I saw his work rate and what he did. And I really think he can actually add a lot to that Brazilian team.
I agree with that. I wasn't expecting a lot from him either, and I was kind of like, this feels like a Victor Moses back to, you know, to Liverpool kind of thing, where it's just not going to do it. But I was actually very impressed with what he did at Chelsea. And I think he'll be a good substitute for Neymar. And I also don't think that – I know Silva is a better defender, but in my eyes, I don't think that they're losing a lot with Dante filling in for him, because he knows not only the Bayern teammates, but he knows the league players. Most of those guys are all in the Bundesliga. He knows
it fits really well for him.
For any match for him to come into, this certainly would be the one that
this is definitely one.
Gustavo as well. Like they have quite a few players that know the German league quite well.
Exactly, but I just think for that, you know, I think that they've got two very good subs. The problem that they have is Fred. The problem is not having a proper
Fred,
number
Fred
nine.
Joe, yeah.
The one that makes Fred. It worthwhile. You know, that's going to be their big issue as well. So I just don't. To me, 12th man, all that kind of stuff. I think that. You know, the intangibles, absolutely. I think Germany has to kind of weather it early. I think that they'll be more than capable and more than prepared to do that. And as long as the ref doesn't feel that much influenced by, you know, obviously that kind of fear. I mean, you also have to imagine that's got to be a very brave ref, because any ref that's going to be the one that's going to be responsible for knocking Brazil out of the World Cup He's going to have that on his head for the rest of his life.
Howard Webb.
Well, he's got to have those balls. I mean, look, I'd be okay with Howard reffing this match because
he can handle it.
He's the kind of guy who can handle that kind of pressure, and we've seen that. And he's not a guy who's afraid to make big calls, whether
or make mistakes
or make mistakes. Certainly, in either case.
I mean, we can talk about Germany.
Well, let's talk about the Germany match. Give us your thoughts on Germany's victory over France.
Germany over France. It was pretty lackluster. I felt like the French never felt that they were going to be able to win this game. I thought it was a psychological thing with France from the get go. I really, really don't feel like they had not that they don't feel. I didn't think that they
the
felt
French
they
had
couldn't
an
win.
Inferiority complex in battle against Germans. Get
something
out.
Like that. Something like that. No, I mean, you know, purely in footballing terms, but. I just don't see them. They came out. They had so much purpose during the group stage. You remember that wonderful game they played against Switzerland was fantastic, and you saw them kind of in all their glory. And I thought that they were, you know, they definitely came up so much bigger than they did in 2010. Obviously, a complete disaster, and they really turned it around. And you were happy to see it. I was definitely happy to see that. I just don't think that psychologically, I don't think that they ever came into this game really thinking that they had a chance. And Germany was, you know, once they got the lead early, they didn't really have to do much more because you never sensed that real urgency from France like they had to do. It was weird. It almost felt like they kind of capitulated early, and that they didn't understand that this was kind of it, that this was over. I think they felt like they were kind of content with where they were. And Germany didn't really have to do that much after getting the early goal.
It seemed like a very professional victory. You know, like
exactly.
You said they took the lead. They knew what they had to do. They kept it tight, and they weren't really under threat. Like, what you think of when did the French really put them under a lot of pressure? And even when they come with a nice shot, you know, was it Benzema with that shot towards the end, and you see Neuer just making a mockery of it as he just bats it away.
Like a big cat, just
a giant beast batting it away. I don't know if I think of King Kong or something, just swatting, you know, little flies away. It's just, it was impressive. And the Germans just look just too strong and too solid.
They changed their formation a bit for the game against France. So they had Long coming on the right and put Boateng with Hummels in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw that. Basically, the depth of the team has gotten much, much better. And then we saw, I mean, Ozil has been having an up and down tournament, but he's still being effective and he's still creating a lot of chances for Germany. So I think efficiency is the only word I can use. I've been using it for a long time for Germany, and that's just what they are. They have players in every position you can imagine, and if they can even play someone like Huidas on left back. It just makes you think, like, what could they do at this tournament? And that's what makes me feel less hopeful about Brazilian.
I still feel they're really missing that cutting edge with Royce, which really would have given them a lot of incision from the wing. But it feels like Germany have efficiently just beaten inferior opponents unspectacularly, but they've just been too good and too strong to really fall to any of these teams. And they're so disciplined and play so well. In that sense, they just don't make mistakes against lesser teams.
Yeah, I think for me that I thought it was a huge thing to move Lahm to right back. To me, I've been clamoring for that. I think that Löw has kind of deferred to the Pep way a little bit too much for my particular liking, especially the way it was exposed against Real Madrid in that Champions League semifinal. I don't like Lahm. I think when your weakest link is your defense, which happens to be the case. There's not really a lot of weak links in Germany, but let's just call it as it is, that back line. When you have the best fullback in the world at that position, you play him there, especially if you have a wealth of central midfield talent. Now, the main issue was, of course, could Schweinsteiger or Khedira both go 90 minutes? That wasn't the case. They brought in Kramer late, I believe, but they both were fit enough in order to actually get out there and play and allow Lahm to be back at right back where he was, you know, once again, critical, dominant, you know, again, no mistakes. He's just the kind of guy that when he's back there, it just seems so much more settled. You're talking about a France team that put five past an Ottmar Hitzfeld defense in Switzerland, which is a very good defense. That's what helped them get there. Nobody was claiming, you know, Switzerland was so great on the offensive end. No, it was about their defense.
Yeah, every match outside of that France, you know, match.
They obliterated people. They obliterated them. They couldn't do it against Germany. And for me, I think Lahm being back there, you know, as captain, organizing that backside, I just think that he makes such a huge difference back there for them. Now, with Neymar out against Brazil, the question is he going to move him back to central midfield? Because now he might not feel that there's as much of a threat, and he's going to get a little bit more out of Lahm centrally. Personally, I hope he doesn't. I hope that they've had a couple of days, and hopefully Schweinsteiger and Kedira and Kors, that midfield three is so good and so efficient and technically just sound that I hope that Löw doesn't all of a sudden do the same kind of mistakes that I think he's made before when he's facing, all of a sudden he starts facing a bigger challenge and he starts tinkering around a lot. It worked in the group stage. That was great. But I think at this level, you got to have your best right back in his spot. And if he can do that, if he doesn't start changing everything around too much and makes the opposition change to Germany or alter itself to Germany as opposed to the other way around, then they'll be fine.
Yeah, it certainly looks good for him. I think that's probably the best way to go forward. And I would like to see Lahm still playing at fullback myself. I agree with you there. Let's move on to the Netherlands against Costa Rica. That was certainly a dramatic match. Considering it was a nil-nil, it was still quite a nail biter with some decent chances for both sides. Ended up going to penalties, and Netherlands took it. What are your thoughts on that one, Robert?
Well, you know, obviously got to give a lot of credit to Costa Rica. I thought that this was going to be the game where they got found out. I thought this was definitely going to be the one where the Dutch, who had weren't super impressive in the round of 16 game against Mexico, kind of had to leave it late. I figured that they would kind of get it together and really break down the Ticos, but they were so well organized at the back. I think they had something like I think they definitely got more people offside than any other team during the entire tournament. So that speaks to their level of organization.
Absolutely.
It speaks to the player capabilities for sure. And obviously Keylor Navas, who was, you know, one of the many wonderful goalkeeping stories that we've seen at this World Cup, besides Tim Howard, Ochoa, Navas, Bravo, Neuer. There's so many good goalkeeping stories to kind of come out of this World Cup, and he was just one of them. You know, the Dutch press, they did all they could, but, you know, to their credit, the Ticos never really wilted. They stayed organized. They didn't succumb to any of the pressure. They kept plugging and plugging away. And at the end, they even had a couple chances to win it. I think they just lacked a little bit of that quality. Maybe if Saborio would have been there, it might have been a different story. But it's still a hell of an accomplishment for them. And you got to love Van Gaal making the decision. At first, I was very confused by it. I thought, well, wait a minute. You got the one guy who's been, you know, you figured Cillessen's going to, you know, it just seemed like an odd substitution at the time. And somebody wrote on Twitter, I remember them saying that it wasn't the fact that Tim Krul is a great shot stopper. It's the fact that Louis Van Gaal made the Costa Ricans think that he was. And that's what got into their heads. And it paid off for them big time. So it's great to see Holland through. I'm glad I did. I don't think that, you know, eventually I think you would have seen the class difference coming out, be it against Argentina or Holland. I think the Ticos did fantastic, had a great tournament. They never lost. So it's a huge credit to them going forward. But on evidence of the team that was doing the most attacking, the team that was the most proactive, I think the better team went through.
I'd probably have to agree with you there with most of those points, at least with them going through, about being excited about Netherlands winning and Tim Krul, not so much. For some of us are not big fans of Tim Krul.
Or Van Gaal.
But, you know, obviously, considering he's your incoming manager for Manchester United, I see we look at it a little bit differently. Sure. And Krul, I mean, the stats were coming out right before the shootout. Was that
he'd saved 2 in like 12.
Yeah, 2 and 20.
Right.
Oh, my
right.
God. Yeah,
2 and 20. Like that. That's not some amazing thing. Like this has to be from training, or like you said, I mean, it is a psychological game. And he was the bigger goalkeeper of the two, and he came
right.
In.
Not just that; it's that he's mentally fresh, you know.
I suppose, but I mean, you can make the argument too that it's tough to throw someone into that. Like you have been sitting the entire, you haven't played a single minute in this tournament, and then you come in the most crucial moment for the
prepared.
Shootout.
Maybe he told Krull to save him.
I'm sure there's something to have to do with that, and I'm sure it probably was that he looked better in, I'm sure they're preparing for penalties.
Yeah.
You know, ahead of these matches, and he probably looked better. So
he did say that this was pre-planned. That this was something that they said if they were going to penalties, that this was going to be. And it's probably just a whole mind game, but it's a brilliant one. At the end of the day, because it worked out. Now, had it not, then we'd be saying something different.
Yeah,
let's just imagine Tim Krul sitting at home every day at the hotel watching videos of people taking penalties. That's his life.
Yeah.
You said, this is a results-based business. So, you know, considering it worked out in their favor, it was a masterstroke by Matt Von Hall.
Now, what did you guys think about the whole, now people are complaining about the trash talking before every penalty taker?
I mean, like,
Trash talk who?
No, he was trash talking before to all the players. I mean, look, it doesn't bother me. It's all gamesmanship. It's all within it. Like,
it wasn't be happy, so
It isn't the way I would go about it, but I mean, I have no problem with it. I've dealt with keepers saying shit to me before taking a penalty, and it's just one of those things that you just have to deal with. And all these things are mind games, and everyone tries to find a way to get a psychological edge. And when you're in a penalty shootout, you know, it's all's fair game. I mean, that you want to get inside you really want to get inside the goalkeeper's head or vice versa. So
I always, and I kept wondering too, is he saying it in Dutch? Because how many of the Costa Rican players speak Dutch?
Maybe English.
English.
And if he was doing it in English, though, not all of them do. So it's kind of
they probably know enough to.
But you always got to kind of wonder about that. Like, there might have been some guy who was just like, I have no idea what
they
hell he's saying.
They didn't
saying,
give us enough really like, facial close-ups during that so we could actually read his lips. Because there'd be gifs.
A lot of the Dutch players speak Spanish as well, though.
What they should have done, remember the death stare from Bruno Martins Indy in the first game?
Yes.
They should have just brought Bruno Martins Indy out there to stand like right by the side of the goal and just give him the death stare each time. There's no way one of those guys would have hit a penalty.
Yep. But anyways, so they've made it through. They're now going to take on Argentina. Argentina were able to pull in past Belgium and, you know, put themselves in the driver's seat. How do you feel about Argentina, Alex?
I feel that I think that basically, as we've seen throughout the whole tournament, Messi has stepped up again and time and time again, and he's been their best player. And it's such a shame that we're now missing Aguero and Di Maria. So you can't really excuse and say that Messi's had loads of help in that department. I mean, we finally got that finish from Higuain that we've all wanted to see. And I don't know. I sort of expected more from Belgium this World Cup. We've seen a lot of underperformance, you know. I think Hazard has been such an underperformer this World Cup.
Yeah.
He's been so on. Even Mertens has looked far more exciting than he has, and it's just weird.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I think it's fair to say that they've underperformed to a certain extent. I mean, granted, they don't really do well in these tournaments, you know, because they haven't been there
this
much.
Is one of the best they've
done they've done well to reach, you know, the quarterfinals, but they continue the same manner of what we saw from them, you know, prior to this, where they were unspectacular but getting results. And once they finally came up against a pretty decent side, you know, they were put to the sword and really didn't offer much. And I mean, to your point, I mean, Hazard has not been, for a player who's emerged as one of the best players in the Premier League and has been lighting the world afire on club level,
like the best young player in the world.
Yeah, right. I mean, a lot of people put him, you know, next Messi, you know, all this stuff. For a player of that kind of stature, he came out and had a stinker of a tournament by far. And it just hasn't been enough from them. What do you think of Belgium?
Well, I thought it was interesting. I mean, I think, unfortunately, they picked the U.S. to play their best game. And they were kind of all over the place in that one. I mean, we were shell-shocked by Belgium. And I think that they looked, outside of just clinical finishing plus Tim Howard, I mean, they looked great, I thought. With Hazard, I don't know if it's just a question of too much pressure on him. But you would think he'd kind of be a little bit used to that after two seasons in the Premier League. You know, everybody talks about it's a different level of pressure. I get that. But it can't be so unfamiliar to these guys. They've been in big games. They've been in big Champions League games. You know, Hazard was in the Champions League semifinals. You know, you can't tell me that that's not a pressure-packed environment. It's a different thing. I understand that because there's nationalism involved and, you know, obviously a different set of players. You can't just go out and buy what you need. But for some reason, he just seemed – you're so used to seeing him. He would make those runs all the time in England where he would basically just cut to the end line and just cut in, and he was just he could ride a tackle so well, and he'd get into these great positions, and he never seemed to do that. He always just kind of hovered around on you know, outside the 18 and kind of deferred to Morales or to Mountains or somebody else, and it just seemed like he was holding something back, which was odd, of course, to watch. Alex, by the way, I think Aguero has been past fit. I don't know if he's going to play, but I'm pretty sure he's been past fit.
He'll
yeah.
Be Di Maria is
a huge loss for them. But I honestly think the one major concern that I had for Argentina coming in has had nothing to do with the offense. It was obviously the defense. And for as much crap as Martin Demichelis gets, not only has he actually provided, and I hate admitting this, but not only did he do a good job at Man City last year, but he's done a very good job in this tournament as well. Demichelis, Garay, Zabaleta, they have all done a hell of a lot better than I think anybody expected them to. And I think you have to give them a lot of credit as well, because no offense gets rolling if you're worried about what's going on at the back all the time.
Yeah, and they kept out one, like, Belgium's most exciting player for me this World Cup wasn't Hazard or Mertens. It was Divock Origi, you know, who's planning his move for Liverpool soon. And I've never heard of him before the World Cup. He's 19 years old, and he was born in 1995, so that makes me very sad in itself. You know, so they kept him out as well. I mean, they've done a really good job this World Cup, and you're right, they deserve a lot of credit for it.
And you didn't have to, you know, and Romero isn't by no means like, you know, world's greatest goalkeeper by any means, but he hasn't really had to do a lot. I mean, honestly, I don't remember how many shots on
goal. I think it's because they have Romero as a goalkeeper that they defend so well.
Yeah, well, they have to.
They know what they have to do. Yeah. He doesn't look the most assured with his hands.
He looks very young, always.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Even he cut the hair, it doesn't make any difference. Just that.
Yeah,
he's my biggest fear. You know, as we've spoken about before, I have Argentina going all the way, and when I watch him play, I'm just been like, oh, this is not a World Cup winning goalkeeper.
Yeah, that's the thing that worries me. I can see Robin or Van Persie going something past him.
We'll get there. We'll get there. But yeah, he is a concern. But let's get to the main star of the show. We talked about how Messi is lacking his supporting cast. You know, Aguero is coming back to be on the bench. I mean, it feels to me that that's a bit of like a Jozy Altidore on the bench for Belgium type of thing. I mean, really, look, how long has it been since Aguero was fit? Because he was, for a large chunk of this Premier League season, was right up there with, I'd say in the first 3 months of the season, it was a toss-up between Aguero, Suarez, once he was off of suspension, and Aaron Ramsey for the best players in the Premier League up until Christmas.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he got an injury, then he came back and looked good. But ever since then, it's been, you know, every couple weeks he plays a couple matches and then another little niggling injury. And
he's always got a hamstring.
Well, that's the thing. And we know with those injuries, like, those don't heal quickly. And every time you push it, it just gets worse and worse. So I really, even if he plays any part, you can't expect him to be the Kun Aguero that we expect to see. And the pressure all lies on Messi. And what we saw, I saw a great tweet about this earlier, actually, was about that Messi is not only a great number 9, he's a fantastic number 10 and a fantastic number 7, all wrapped up into one player.
And
he's been showing some of this. I mean, the world's best player has been showing a lot of his skills to the entire world. I mean, a few of those dribbling moves, you know, when Belgium tried to hack him with 3 or 4 fouls in a row and he rode 3 challenges before being taken down. And then a couple, you know, receiving the ball and turning in such tight space so quickly has just been fantastic and breathtaking to watch. What are your thoughts on Messi there?
Yeah, you kind of ran out of superlatives for Messi, you know, the last couple of years at Barcelona. And it was all just kind of for the first time waiting for him to put it together here. I don't think it's going to be enough in this tournament, but I think he's gone a long way towards solidifying that reputation as also an international player. And, you know, he'll never be Maradona in Argentina because he doesn't have the type of personality that commands that.
Right.
But this tournament is going a big way for him. It's also what's pretty amazing about him, and maybe a part that's kind of lost because of all, you know, the goals and the dribbling and all that stuff is the vision that he has with his passes.
Oh, the ball to Correa was incredible.
Yeah, the way he also unlocks defenses with him, if he's got willing runners, and he does because they all know that he will find him. For a little guy who doesn't see that much of the pitch, he has extraordinary vision. And he has the ability not only to put it in the back of the net, but to also drop off dimes for Di Maria, for Palacio, for all the other guys that are getting forward. He really has, that's an un, an unheralded ability that he has as well. And I think that this tournament has given us a really good chance to see that aspect of him as well. He scored early because he had to. I think he's been, I don't want to say delegating it, because I'm sure, you know, he's obviously been trying as well. But let's face it, the defenses are keying on him as much as possible. They're doing everything they can to keep two and three guys around him as often as possible. So what it's doing is it's allowing his passing game to come to the forefront. And you're seeing, obviously, what a great talent he is in that respect as well. And as far as Aguero goes and whoever replacements, you know, you're talking about a very deep offensive team. Palacio, I think is a lot better than what he's shown, despite the rat tail that I can't stand. He's definitely a player that can jump into that role as well and be successful.
I think we'll see. They'll probably be starting Lavezzi as well on the wing, probably. And yeah, we'll see. I don't know if they bring in, you know, someone who played in the beginning of this tournament but hasn't.
Maxi's
just a bit past it. He's more of just a wide midfielder in a 4-4-2 more so than in.
Put him in as a late sub kind of guy, yeah.
But they did play a little bit of Ricky Alvarez, who I wouldn't be too surprised if he got some minutes. I was a little surprised to see Palacio when we did, but Ricky's a decent option. They'll certainly have Lavezzi on one wing. And Alex and I were talking about this earlier about, we finally got the goal from Higuain, and he's going to have to step up. I mean, now as far as the big names go, I mean, Lavezzi is the biggest name after those two, but Higuain really is the only other big star in attack, with the few names they've left. Well, with Di Maria and Aguero out, like, the next man is Higuain. And so he got the game winning goal in this match. He's gonna have to show it again. Because, like, to your point, Robert, what Messi can do is dependent. I mean, he's set up a lot of players, a lot of his teammates with perfect passes, you know, weighted balls, and they haven't really repaid his faith. He could have easily 2-3 more assists without any question.
Yeah.
If they've been able to put away the chances he's put on the platter for him. And so we're gonna have to see that finishing from some of these guys. They're gonna have to step up. It's gonna have to be Lavezzi and Higuain coming through.
I've been a little disappointed in Lavezzi, just as far as the final ball, the final third. I think he's been fine. I think his work rate's been good. He's just not showing. You know, when you remember kind of Napoli, Lavezzi, that was such a – he was so dynamic and so, like, kind of clinical. And that seems to be something that's missing. I hope he can step up and have a good game. It's going to be really interesting to see if – against the Dutch, because they're going to be playing that kind of five-man back line in defense, so that it's going to be pushing out. It's going to be interesting where Messi picks up the ball. If Messi's picking up the ball further forward, then he's going to be very effective. If they keep pushing them back and Messi's picking up the ball in midfield, then they will not be. It's the same problem that they had back in 2010 against really good teams. They would push him back and Messi wouldn't be picking up the ball until the center circle. And that makes all the difference. And with a five-man back line that's also very dynamic, how far they push forward and keep them out and where they keep Messi in relation to that line is going to be very, very telling about how much penetration Argentina can get.
Yeah, Alex, what do you think about this matchup between the Netherlands and Argentina? How do you see it going?
I mean, I want Van Gaal to cry, you know? So, I don't know yet. I just don't know. The thing is, it's been such a toss-up because...
We're here to give opinions, fucking fence.
I want Messi to score a hat-trick. I want Messi to cement his place because I think he's by far the world's best player. And... by far, I mean, like, he is special. He is magic. He deserves to have his name in there with Pele.
But what about this match?
Well, the only way he's going to do that is by making Argentina win.
So predict. Give us a fucking prediction.
I don't want to give you. Okay.
Don't waver.
Okay. Let's go for 3-2-2 Argentina.
Okay.
Okay. Now, do you honestly think, though, that his reputation, even after this tournament, let's say they make the final and lose to Germany in the final, which is my prediction from the start of the tournament.
Right.
If they do that, does his reputation as, you know, one of the, let's say, top 10 players ever go out the window because he didn't win the World Cup?
No, it doesn't go out. For me, it will never go out. But I think for some people, in order to consider him that great, and in order to put him with the Maradona, even though it's a completely different era, the pace is different, the tactics are different, I think he would need to do something special.
I think he kind of needs that feather in his cap. I think he's probably the best ever. I mean, I put him. I mean, granted, look, I didn't get to see, you know, DiStefano just passed, which is sad. I didn't get to see him play. I didn't get to see
Pele when I got Eusebio.
Yeah.
So it's hard, but in the modern era, I haven't seen a player as good as Leo Messi, and it's just one of those things that, I mean, I think even look, taking this Argentina team under, I mean, I'm going to say undermanned, but you know, losing out on big components of their talent, you know, and taking them all the way to, let's say, a final, even just if that's it. And I mean, imagine if they, you know, look, he lost to Germany in the last World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it wouldn't surprise you for that to happen again. That team is very organized. They know how to neutralize a player. So it wouldn't be that crazy, but I don't think it wouldn't dent his case right now. But the one thing that he knows he needs is that feather in his cap of getting, it's more than a feather in a cap, it's a fucking World Cup.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing, like, if, and hopefully when he wins the World Cup, like, that's when you can put the crown on him and say, at the very least, he's the best player of the modern era by far, because there's no one else that comes close. And then it's the age old debate of what, you know, everyone's going to argue that the player that played in their generation is the better player.
Yeah, but
and,
you can take Messi back to the 50s and 60s and he would be sensational.
Of course he would. Of course he would. Well, but you can't say that shit, because that argument is a bunch of bullshit, because we don't fucking know what he'd do today. And so then we just get in this bullshit argument of what they would do today versus then.
Right.
I mean, the game evolves, and so it's really hard to compare eras in this sense.
Right. For me, when you're talking about, if you wanted to take Brazilian Ronaldo and put him across any era, there's nothing he couldn't do. It's, you know, before all the knee injuries and stuff like
right.
that.
Yeah.
Was there ever a better player? What could Zidane do? You know, Zidane to me
is
top five of all time.
Zidane,
how, you know, what would he do at different times? There's no way to say that, because everything, you know, like Marquez was saying, like, all the organization has changed. The, you know, the whole game has changed, and it's going to continue to evolve. I think you have to take football almost in like 20-year increments, and those are the only kind of real areas that you can kind of compare the games to each other. You know, obviously this past decade in the 90s is one, and then you've got the, you know, from maybe the 60s to the 80s. It's just, there's just such a difference between how the game was played back then, the equipment, the training, the nutrition, all of these things are so different now that, you know, sure. And here's the interesting part too about the whole Messi situation is, in today's day and age, what is he now, 26?
27,
I think? 26, 27. So you have to realize the way his pace and the way he kind of moves, this might be, and it definitely was the very, as far as I'm concerned, the last big shot for Ronaldo, because he's 29. He's going to be 33 at the next World Cup.
Right.
Messi is going to be, what, 31, 32 at the next one?
He'll be turning 31 at the next World Cup.
Right. Is he going to still be the same way? This is his best shot, bar none. I know it says
in South America. Yeah, no, it's the best chance by far. By far. You know, and like I said, I mean, that's the main reason why I picked him, because of the year that he's coming off of. And, you know, with people trying to say, with now that Ronaldo, Cristiano, you know, had broken his streak of World Player of the Year, and then he's, you know, earning all the plaudits, and people starting to say that he's the world's best player. I mean, it was all set up for Messi to take the stage and show why he's been the best. But I mean, to your point, you're talking about transcending different generations, but there are tangible measurements, you know, and like we can say the fact that, like, when they do win a World Cup, it is a feather in the cap. You know, when you do win a World Player of the Year 4 years in a row, like, if you can do all this, if you can win a Copa America, if you can win a, you know, he's won the Olympics, he's won La Liga, he's won the Champions League, he's won the World Player of the Year 4 years running.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he did do that 4 years running, and if he adds a World Cup to it, I mean, that's a CV that can rival anybody's by far, and that's a tangible thing that we can say. Because I mean, look, like, Zidane was one of my favorite footballers ever, you
mm-hmm.
know? And he's won nearly everything, you know, and he's won, you know, all the big titles.
What didn't he win?
He did win everything.
I guess he did win everything, didn't he?
He
never won the Premier League. Could he do it at Stoke?
Who cares?
Stoke on a cold Tuesday.
Zidane, Ronaldo, Ronaldinho, and Messi are the top in this generation. They're my favorite.
Well, favorite. Yeah, but I mean, like, Ronaldinho hasn't done. Ronaldinho is fantastic, but he doesn't have those other things on his CV. I mean, he's won a. He's
won most the World of Cup. Fuck,
he has won a World
he's
Cup.
He won everything too.
Well, son of a bitch.
He won everything, including the only man to have also won a Copa Libertadores with Atletico Mineiro.
Yeah, he did do that. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
So, in fact, he has probably the brightest resume of them all.
Well, shit. I suppose you're right. Now that I think about it. But look, I love Ronaldinho. He's a fantastic player.
Those four are my favorites.
But I mean, I'm just thinking of, like, but you know, then you think of, like, a player who played at his peak for a long period, and that's one of those things. I mean, like, Ronaldinho was brilliant, but you know, he certainly
6 years.
I mean, but you know, his star faded at a certain point, and we're yet to see. I mean, many of us don't think that Messi will fade the same way, but only time is going to tell. Yeah. I mean,
it might take its toll.
Imagine, literally, he just turned 27, but then you think of the amount
been around for 10 years,
fucking 11 years.
11 years.
Okay. Yeah, but beyond that too, remember every defense is keying in on him as well, and he's starting to pick up a lot more injuries. You notice that, you know, last year a lot of people were saying, is he saving himself for the World Cup? You know, but he's because he was constantly getting
schedules.
A bunch of
things. I mean, these guys play the longest seasons out of any professional sport, you know, and especially, and it's the best players get stuck with getting, what, a 10-day break after the World Cup before they have to return to training?
Yeah,
you know, like,
crazy.
Best case scenario, they get 2 weeks off while the rest of the first team squad is in training. You know, these players, and we've seen the kick on effects of the injuries to all the Spanish players and some of the Dutch.
Yeah,
that go through this grueling schedule, and success has its repercussions because bodies get worn out. You know,
you
need to recharge. You know, you need a month off.
Yeah, it's amazing to me, especially if you thought, and I think that had a lot to do maybe with Spain. If you think about it,
right.
Their players over the last, if you think about it, what did they do? They all went deep in European with their clubs, in European competition with their clubs. Last year, they went all the way to the Confederations Cup final. They didn't have a break for that. The year before that, they won the Euro, so they went to the end of that. They had gone basically 3 years without one single solid break.
Yep.
Constant football. Constant, you know, so when you add all that together, you know, they were talking about a little bit about the drive and all that. I think it had a lot more to do with Del Bosque trying too hard to accommodate Diego Costa personally. But I think that it's also just that wear and tear. 3 straight years of just, like you said, maybe 2 weeks off or something like that at most. The physical, you just can't keep up with that. And all those guys, you know, they didn't really do a lot of replacing. All those guys had the wear and tear of miles from all those past 3 years as well. So something had to break eventually. And
yeah,
I think
it's certainly, I mean, you can make any kind of analogy. I mean, like, people, I think someone was talking about, you know, like, we're going to make a basketball reference here just to piss everybody off.
No.
But no, but like Kobe Bryant playing hundreds and hundreds of playoff games and adding up to multiple seasons onto a body that's already been in the league since he was 17. And you look at the miles it adds. And
the Olympics.
Yeah, and the Olympics, all those kind of things. So when players have to go through that, it certainly affects them. And bodies have to recover, and that's why we see some of these guys breaking down with injury. I mean, even Cristiano's injury. I mean, the tendonitis of the knee. Look, like I recently suffered tendonitis for the first time, and I learned a little bit about it, and it's something that obviously it takes rest to get better.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, when does a guy like Cristiano get any rest? He doesn't. He doesn't. None of these guys do, and that's what, you know, these things take a physical tour. And
injections is rest these days.
And they lose it. Well, so Robert, give me a score prediction for this match. Do you see Argentina making the final?
I do actually. I think that you know, there's going to be obviously a massive Argentinian contingent there. I think Di Maria is a big loss. I just have a feeling that the Messi show is definitely going to come to the fore, and I think it's going to be very, very close, but I think that Argentina will take it like 2-1.
I think I'm with you. Messi brace 2-1. 2-1 to Argentina.
Yep.
Actually, no, I'm going to go back. Higuain with one, assisted by Messi, and Messi with the other. That
Perfect.
Sounds about right. Now let's get score predictions. I believe you and I, Robert, have Germany beating Brazil. I'm going to go with a 3-1 scoreline, actually.
Wow.
3-1. You know, it'll be tight, but, you know, in that 2-1 towards the end of the game, Germany going to get that.
I cannot change my prediction. I went for Brazil, and I'm
you picked
sticking
them.
With them.
You sure you flippy Philly flopper?
I've never flopped before. That sounds wrong.
Bull.
Brazil. Brazil, I'm sticking with Brazil. And, I mean, it's probably not going to happen now that I think about it.
Just give me a score.
2-1 to Brazil.
2-1 to Brazil.
2-1 to Brazil.
Who the fuck is going to score the goals?
I don't know. Fred? maybe Fred. A free kick? You never know.
Oscar on a free kick. David Luiz on a free kick, I guess.
You never know.
Dodgy penalty.
I'm guessing extra time. Probably 1-1, something along those lines. 1-1, and either Germany wins it in extra time or
pick
you just got to rely.
The weird thing is, even if Germany has a bad game, I still think Germany can beat them. That's the worst part. But I want Brazil to win, so I'm sticking with Brazil. Right,
stick with it. But no, you got to pick one though, Robert. Are they gonna win in penalties the way the Germans do? Or
I'm gonna say 1-1. Germany wins on penalties, obviously.
All right, we can go with that.
I'll take that. That's fine with me. Like I said, man, my bracket at the beginning, I was terrible throughout. I mean, Japan let me down. I can't even think of all the other ones that let me down. My bracket was terrible, but I did have three of the last four, and I got a Germany-Argentina final with Germany winning it. So as long as my bracket works out at the end, that's where you get the most points, so yep. I'll be happy with
that. Yeah, we have the same picks except for the final. So, I mean, Robert, the only thing that's really annoyed me about this World Cup so far is that
that it's over?
That's only over, but also that all the stars... all the young stars that I wanted to see, they're all gone, you know. There's no more Neymar, there's no more James Rodriguez, there's no more Joel Campbell.
Joel Campbell.
Yeah.
Don't start with me with Joel Campbell. Do not start with me.
We didn't get to see much of Balotelli, of Royce, you know. We've lost Di Maria as well, so it's like...
Yeah.
It feels like it's all primed for Messi. That's what it feels like right now.
And it is. But you're also going to see, like I said, if they get to the final as we anticipate, I just think that, again, you can't rely on the one guy all the way to the top. And I think that they're going to run into a couple too many roadblocks. And I just don't think that – I think Germany is just primed. I don't – every team at this World Cup has shown deficiencies. It's never been – every single time it looked like one was going to step up and make themselves the absolute favorites, they had a drop-off. It happened in every single game. Every team has shown some type of fallibility.
And that's the thing. That, like, we haven't seen any team look spectacular throughout.
Right. You
know? And I won't be surprised if any of these teams make it to the final, any of these four.
Yeah. Oh, look. There's
two fucking matches. That's a bold prediction.
There are absolutely the four. You know, the four best teams that should be there. I don't have any doubt about that. I think that the four that are there absolutely deserve it.
Come on, Greece. And
I honestly think that, you know, the World Cup is better for it to have those traditional powers there. You know, two European teams, two South American teams. It's, you know, it's dreamland.
Yeah, they're certainly not complaining about it. The ratings, you know,
and that's great. And you also have, you know, it's this, you know, it's a great semifinal. You know, again,
absolutely.
You know, think about that. Germany against Brazil. They've played one time in the World Cup throughout the entire history. I don't know how many, 90 games or something like that. They only met once in that 2002 final, which could have been a very different story if Balak had not been suspended for it. So I thought I'm not going to say any of those guys are still around, but there might be some, you know, a little bit of that revenge factor involved. But then of course, you know, you bring it over, it's actually in Brazil. So that changes, you know, that whole dynamic on that side. Then you've got, you know, Argentina, Holland. I mean, are you kidding me? The best team that's never won it and playing against the team that most cruelly knocked them out in 78. You know, the narratives for this are just so wonderful.
The narratives could be even greater if it's Brazil against Argentina in the final.
God, I don't know if I could handle that. I don't think the world can handle that. You know what? I honestly don't like the idea of it. I mean, I know that sounds awful, but I really don't. I don't want to see a Brazil-Argentina final.
It's a melting pot.
You think it'll just get ugly? Is that why? I mean, why wouldn't you want to see it?
You know, in some strange ways, there'd be just so much... In a sense, I like the contrast. I don't like it, like, for example, when you get to the Champions League and teams from the same countries play each other, even like the final.
Right.
I don't – it's just to me when you're talking about international competition, I enjoy it more when it's the contrast of you know –
I agree, and by that
it's
point,
just a preference.
But by that point, I think actually the worst possible final would be Germany against Holland because you want to see a South American team in the final. You know, being played in South American soil, whether it's Argentina or Brazil,
right?
I feel like that gives it more. So even if it were Brazil Holland would be all right. You know, you'd have the best team.
Brazil Holland would feel like a little bit of a letdown to me. I'm not going to lie.
It's not what I want to see. But I think a Germany Netherlands in Brazil would feel like the weakest. I mean, not the weakest, but I wouldn't be that happy with it. I feel like every other matchup I'd be happier about. Basically, I just need Netherlands to lose. And then whichever team goes out of that, I'll be excited. I think a Germany-Argentina would be a fantastic final.
Right.
And that's what you and I have both picked since the beginning.
I'm just, you know what I'm worried about, though, is like we're losing. Remember, like, there were all these wonderful, and I'm sure there still are, but you remember like all those little factoids about different World Cups, like a European team had never won outside of Europe until 2010.
Right.
A host had never not gone through to the knockout round until 2010.
Right.
Like, it seems like all those are disappearing. Now, the only one left that I can think of is the fact that no European team has ever won in South America. And, of course, if we get Germany-Holland, then that'll change that. So I don't want that to happen either, because I'm losing all the cool little factoids that you can, like, tell strange people that they're like, oh, really? You actually know what you're talking about, because you can come up with something stupid like that.
But, you know,
I like having those. And I don't want those to disappear.
You got to say if Germany do go through this gauntlet. I mean, because, look, they haven't
been the toughest road. Imagine in 10 years you're telling your kids or your family that Argentina and Brazil were in the final in 2014. It's a spectacle.
It'd be absolutely fantastic. But I mean,
Cup final. It's going to be a spectacle no matter what.
Right. Yeah. But I mean,
you think the people that bought tickets aren't going to show up because it's not a South America team? They're all going to be there. Don't worry, there will not be a no-show.
The end of the Brazilian economy happened when Messi scored his hat trick.
I mean, oh man, I'm just thinking of, do you remember that Brazil Argentina friendly in the United States a couple years ago? Didn't Messi have a hat trick in that match? It was beautiful. It was a Brazil Germany. I think it was one of the first matchups between Neymar and Messi.
Right.
And yeah, it was the 4-3. Oh man.
Oh yeah. 4-3. When you say 4-3, that sounds familiar. Yeah, but I don't remember anything.
Messi had like a hat trick.
Right.
It was just absolutely insane. I could just see something really exciting like that. But you have to say, like, if Germany do win this and they go through, you know, I don't think their run through has been the most difficult of any of the teams so far. But to have to go through France, who is arguably definitely one of the best European teams at this tournament, and then to go through Brazil and then Argentina would be such a great story, because we went into South America and took on the two biggest heavyweights they had, you know, back to back in a semifinal and final to win the tournament. And that'd be one hell of an accomplishment, and one hell of a way to win, you know, be the first European team to win one in South America.
For sure. And I mean, if you look back at other runs, you know, like Germany back in 2002, nobody was going to respect that run had they won. You know, they beat Paraguay, then they beat the US, and then they beat South Korea.
Right.
They avoided every single major power. That was not a great German team. They avoided every major power in order to get to that final against Brazil. So you cannot say if Germany wins this one, having gone through France, Brazil, and then Argentina or Holland, that they didn't deserve it. And I told you guys, remember I told you guys this, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. I said, you know, the 24-year rule, man, there's no way around it. They haven't won it since 1990. It's just destiny. There's no way around it.
There may be a way around it, and it could be blocking them as a little man named Messi. But we shall see. Or it might be Fred. I don't know.
How is it possible that they don't have a better number nine?
It just boggles the mind.
Because Diego Costa exists.
Because Diego Costa decided to play for Spain, I guess.
Yeah, you know what? I guess that's why they must be so. You got a feel for that guy if you think about it, too. I mean,
really?
Think about it.
Look! I'm an Atletico fan, and even I don't feel like that sorry for him. I mean, granted, him going to Chelsea doesn't really help that much. But,
oh yeah. Well, I mean, he had to leave. If you think about that, I mean, like I said, he's hated in Brazil. Completely booed. I mean, now he's hated in Spain because he's kind of like the scapegoat
and
for why everything went wrong.
In
yeah, and then he's gonna be a no show for Chelsea. I'm telling you, he's gonna be a no show.
With Suarez leaving, we need a nasty bastard in the league, and he will take up the mantle as the villain.
Yeah, but nobody cares about the villain who's not good, and I don't think he's gonna.
He's good.
He is not. He was a journeyman. He was loaned out all the time.
I've watched him these past two seasons. Look, I didn't even rate him as highly as I did, you know, the past year. I thought he was tidy, but I didn't think he was, you know, as amazing as he looked. He had a very good season.
He had a good season. Correct. He is Shevchenko 2.0. At Stamford Bridge.
Wow. Well, okay. At Stamford Bridge. I was like, Shevchenko, calling him Shevchenko. Shevchenko had a pretty good career, but yes.
No. Bridge. At Stamford Bridge.
I think actually the reason I don't like the comparison is the athleticism. And I don't think Shevchenko had the pace and whatnot and the power.
I got,
But
no, I'm not. I don't even mean it in terms of comparing the players. I'm comparing it in terms of moving to Chelsea and being like some big, huge star who was coming over to make a huge difference and was going to score 25 to 30 goals in a season. And that's not going to happen.
Fair enough. Well, we've got our predictions for next year's Premier League. Don't, do not pick Diego Costa as your fantasy striker. It will not happen. He will not score the goals. Even though Cesc Fabregas will be assisting him, I pray they don't score shit. But I think we'll leave it there for today. Thank you so much, Robert, for joining us. You can follow Robert on Twitter at RobertWFD. You can follow Alex at @_Beck_ and follow me at Morning Pint. Until later, guys, we'll have to chat again.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Of course. Thanks.
Puto, pinches holandeses nos sacaron del mundial con sus penaltis fingidos y malicia natural. Robin gran actor, árbitro segatón, nuestras grandes hazañas nos las anuló un cabrón. A punto de ganarles tenía que haber un truco, el árbitro era un puto y al final no dio un fruto. Chicharito, Herrera, yo guardado, yo y los demás, perdón, realmente bien jugado, mas no fue suficiente, ya ven que alguna gente no puede jugar limpio, pinche Robin Simio, puto, pinches holandeses nos ganaron el partido con su árbitro vendido, que bien les había ido selección, te amamos Piojito, todos los alabamos, ustedes son los buenos y ellos son los guarros, ustedes son campeones y todos lo sabemos, aunque el triunfo les roben, son los mejores. ¡Puto! Pinches holandeses nos robaron el mundial con su árbitro de mierda y su penalti irreal. Que la FIFA aprenda a ver repetición, esa jalada a Rafita ameritaba expulsión. Siempre han sido unos cerdos, en 2010 lo vimos y ahora ya van dos. Expulsen a esos simios, chinguen a su madre y ya luego veremos. En 4 años vendremos quitando su desmadre. Pinches holandeses y viva la selección. La Juve canta y no lloren, que eres todo un campeón.